All right, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Mary Ann.
Hi, my name is Mary Ann. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary Ann.
So glad I'm the speaker tonight. I'd hate to walk in front of the speaker and be kicked or shot, you know. So now I'm grateful I'm a speaker. This is the first time, so thank you. Anyway, and to have Francine get her cake, it got me going already, you know. I'm so grateful for the people who have come before me, who led the way, and the people who have come in front of me. All of you are so very, very, very important to me. Grateful. Okay, my prayer is that I'm not here to impress me or you. I just want God to speak what He will through me, and I want to share my experience, strength, and hope, and what it was like, and what it's like today. Let's see. Say it again.
What happened was...
Yeah, what happened? Okay, anyway, I'm here to share. I don't want to go on and on. Anyway, as I said, my name is Mary Ann. I'm an alcoholic. I don't talk about my life too much, what it was like, because right here, right now, is so important to me for me to be sober. But anyway, I'm going to go on with it. I'm an only child. I was raised by first-generation Americans who kept their culture a lot. I could not communicate with people, including my folks, including teachers, including anybody. I couldn't get out of myself, and I couldn't let anybody in. Going into school, they thought I was grossly immature. In those days, they didn't have tests, so I wasn't put on any medication. I was just sent to school. I made it okay because they just passed me anyway, which was okay. Always trying to prove myself. Always trying to prove myself. I wanted to be a part of, but I didn't even feel a part of me. I was just there. Always trying, but never quite making the grade. I remember people loving me, but I couldn't call it love. It was just that they were there, and they were somewhat safe because I never felt safe. I didn't feel safe with my folks even, or with myself. And I don't know if it was them. That's why I don't share a lot about my folks, or if it was just this malady that I had. And I'm tired of trying to figure out why and how come. It's not all that important today. And that's a good thing. It's a relief that I don't have to figure out. And I stayed with my folks for the first, I'm wanting to say 9 years. My mother became really ill. Went to a foster home. There was sexually abused by the man. And but I never told anybody anything, including me. It was just like, you just go through life and you just don't have to talk about it. You just take the next step, period. That's all. You know, it's not a big deal. Anyway, my mother died shortly after I got into that foster home. I remember sitting at the table, and my dad came over, and my uncle, and he says, your mother died 8:30 Friday. I said, oh. Went into the bedroom, maybe cried 4 minutes, went back out, when's the funeral? That's the only way I knew how to operate. And I never told my dad anything about what was going on at home. I was supposed to stay there until I was 12. I want to back up a little bit, too. I went to church as a little girl. I heard about God. But God was always someplace out there. And maybe if I did good enough, he might accept me if I could just make the grade. But I didn't make the grade, you know, so kind of give up on that one. So finally I started telling my dad little things. I didn't tell him what was going on, but like saying, let me come and live with you for a while, you know. And it happened. 11 and a half years old, I went back to go live with my dad. And my dad didn't sexually abuse me. He had a lot of problems of his own. He was an extreme hoarder, to say the least. You know, we had like a little aisleway you could go through the house, you know, that lead into the kitchen, which was a terrible disaster. I believe that my dad really loved me. At that point, I didn't. Because again, if you love me, you're going to love me the way I want you to love me. If you can't show me the way I want you to show me, you don't love me. You just plain out don't love me. My dad loved me. He wouldn't stockpile all those things. He would bring home food. He wouldn't take me to bars. He wouldn't do this. He would do that. But today I'm going to tell you, I had a dad who loved me, but it came through these steps. Did not know that. And talking about God, I equated my heavenly father with my earthly father. Did not know that either. What a shock. What a shock. And I equated my heavenly father with me, and I judged me unmercifully. Nobody could judge me the way I judge me. So I started getting in trouble with the law, and I was in and out of juvenile hall, out on the streets, in very dangerous places. But one place was as good as another in my mind. There was no safe place. There was no good place. There was just places, just like with people. There was no good people, no bad people, no dangerous people, no safe people. There was just people. Everybody was the same, whether you were a prostitute on the street, whether you were in an evening gown at the Hilton. You were the same to me, you know. I could not differentiate. And as I said, alcohol was a beverage in our home. Never had a problem with it. Both my folks drank. Don't think either of them had a problem. My dad might have had a problem with medication, but I can't even judge that if he didn't, if he used it as a manipulation tool or if he just liked the side effects. But I don't think he could get a lot of side effects from Thorazine, but he did others too, so, you know, who knows. Consequences. I didn't see anything as a consequence. It's just things that happen. It wasn't a result of what I did or what I didn't do. It was just things that happen. And oh well, that's it. Excuse me. Didn't mind getting arrested at all. It was get to see old friends, you know, find out what's going on. And it was a safe place. I got three meals a day there. got a cot. And nobody really could pick on me that much either, because these other older people would look after me, the counselors and stuff like that. And that felt pretty good, because I didn't know how to stand. I didn't know how to stand for me, stand, and I didn't have any beliefs necessarily. I just didn't know how to stand, period. I always felt this vacuum inside. I wanted something what would be worthwhile, maybe worth even living for and feeling good about, but I couldn't. Nothing could touch it, and I tried most everything. I can't think of much I didn't try and much I didn't do. Anyway, around 16, I got pregnant, got married to the guy, and it was an abusive relationship. And again, drinking was always there. And when I drank because I did like the taste most of the time. Once in a while, I'd get drunk, but it wasn't a big deal. And this went on all my life. I don't remember not drinking, so I don't remember a big turning point where I, you know, just picked up that drink and I got drunk, and it was slow and patient and cunning and baffling. So I left my son's dad when I was 18. And I accomplished a lot of different things in that time, because I quit school in the ninth grade. I was 16 in the ninth grade, so, you know, I completed the eighth grade. You know, went back to school, got my high school, got my LVN, started working, did pretty good for myself. Got in some crazy relationships. And I started drinking really heavy, and then I started getting drunk, and then I started feeling really good, though. I felt comfortable. I felt okay. It was a different feeling. I could shoot pool. I could dance. I could talk. I felt wonderful. I liked it. I liked it. And it worked. And it worked. I can't say that hole was filled, but I didn't feel the intensity of it. That hole didn't matter anymore, because the outside was okay, it seemed like. And as time went on, I started getting in problems. I hit a car, took off. What's funny about this particular one, I hit a car, took off. My son was in the car with me. And I forgot about it up till about 7 years ago. I've been sober 36 years, mind you. Yeah. And my son said, "Do you remember when you hit that car and took off?" That scared me, Mom. You know, and here he's 50, you know. And I said, "Oh, yeah." So things are revealed even after many years. Many years. It's never ending. The thing is the sting is gone. The sting is gone, you know, which is good. Which is good. And I went to county hospital to detox. And then I went to a 30-day program from there. They said, "Well, maybe you need halfway house." So I said, "Okay, you know." My son was staying with my dad, of all people, and his wife. And then I heard there was a big commotion there, and, you know, things were going crazy there. And I thought, I know how to settle this. I'll just get my butt back home. But I needed to stay in this halfway house for at least 30 days, and I wasn't there that long. See, when I went to that halfway house, I had a good job. I had a home. I had my son. I had everything what anybody could really ever want. So anyway, I said, I know how to do it. Go to the bar. Get something to drink. They'll kick me out. I'm back home, you know. So I went to the bar. Someone bought me a drink. Went back. Said, Mary Ann, you've been drinking. I said, yeah, that's right. You're out of here. I said, okay. Pack my bags. Go back home. Yeah. Make it real simple. Went back home. Tried to stay sober a little bit. Started going to meetings. Went under the influence, though, you know. And usually what I would do is stop at a bar on the way to the meeting just to shoot pool, though. I always just wanted to shoot pool, just to talk. And then before you know it, double brandy, please. Just one. I'll make it to the meeting. Most of the time I didn't. So I thought, okay, what I'll do is, I know we're not supposed to talk about other substances here, but maybe I'll take a Soma. You know, my back's been bothering me anyway, a little Vicodin won't hurt, you know, and I could make it to the meeting, you know. And I made it to the meeting. I don't advise people to do that. I didn't stay sober. I usually ended up going out and getting drunk. Don't know why, but I did, you know. But I was always welcome back, which was absolutely amazing. I didn't talk to people, and usually I sat at the back of the room, and I got here right before the meeting started, and right when it ended, I was out. You know, it was like this little blonde lightning just took off. And I couldn't let anybody in, and I couldn't let them out again, you know. No matter how much I tried, I wanted to be a part, but I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. So one time I got drunk and I thought, well, you know, it'll be just this time and I'll sober up. That night I got drunk. My son was with me. He got back. Well, that's a long story in itself too, but I won't get into that. I have a little time. I could said because there's a little time. Anyway, he says, you'll be back at 8 o'clock. In this particular area where we were at was a very bad area. Some very bad things happened to me. And it was getting dark, and I thought, the boy's in trouble. You know, my friend had a gun. I had a car. I thought, I'm going to shoot any sucker that touches him. I will shoot him dead. Thank God we didn't get stopped, you know? Here, we're driving. I have a gun in my hand. And I'm waiting for any sucker. And he was walking with the little girl, you know, and got in the car. Says, we're going home, you know? So we went home. I was going to go to sleep like any other night. It was going to be like any other night. My son went to sleep. I couldn't get to sleep. Something happened, and I don't know what happened. But I couldn't think rationally. I couldn't talk rationally, and again, I couldn't reach out to anybody. And I called my foster parents, the one who abused me. That's the only number I had. And I said, something's going on. My son was going to go to camp that Saturday because it was on a Friday that Saturday. I said, I got to go to mental hospital. You know, I just, you know, it's just too far gone, too far gone. And went there, stayed there for quite a while, got out talking about a woman and a little girl who knew how to make it on the streets, who knew how to make it just living, and all of a sudden I needed 24-hour care. I got discharged. I need someone to tell me when to take a bath, fix my food for me. The big deal what I had is making crafts at mental health, coming back. And my son went to go live with his dad. He didn't want to live with me. I don't know why. I mean, you know, he had everything a boy would want, you know. And yet he chose to go live with his dad, who was an alcoholic also, but I was less, you know. That hurt. I was living with my dad and my stepmother at the time. And my foster parent says, why don't we let Marianne come and stay with us for a while? I got off the meds what I was on, did much better. I'm not advising that because meds are very, very helpful when they're the right meds for the right people. It's wonderful, and they do work for a lot of people. For me, it was not good. Yeah. So anyway, I went over there, started doing better, went back to work. My head was on right, started gaining again. What did I do? Go back and drink. Things were so good, I could do it again, you know? I could do it again. I always could come back somehow, it seemed like, no matter what. And took that for granted. So then I kept on coming back to meetings again and again and again. And I kept on stopping, but I kept on starting again and again and again. I kept on starting. The last time I, first time I chose a sponsor who had so many sponsees. She wouldn't know if I was alive or dead, you know. She probably didn't even know I was one of her sponsees, but she liked the buckles in her belt, like, you know. Thinking, yeah, I have 20 sponsees, yeah. And no accountability, not working the steps, don't even have to call her, which made it kind of nice. That's, you know, because I could say I had a sponsor, I was going to meetings, what more could you want, yeah? Finally, I chose a sponsor, and I don't advise people to do this, but I chose a sponsor, a male sponsor, because it was hard with me with females, because, well, I didn't trust anybody anyway. I mean, I didn't trust male or female, but didn't feel less than with a male. It's just like, yes, some guy, you know, worked those steps to the best of my ability. For me to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that was so hard for me to admit powerless over anything because I felt so powerless. I didn't want to acknowledge it, though, and not over a substance, you know. And you would think that I would know that my life was unmanageable by losing home, son, job, mind at one point, not being able to take care of myself. My sponsor says, write down the ways your life had become unmanageable. And I thought, okay. It was a whole list of things. I mean, I wish I could just tell you it was just five or six things. I mean, it was a whole list, you know. And this is where ACT as F comes in, is came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. As I said, I had a belief in God, but not a trust. and not a no, so God. I didn't know God. I just believe, but, you know, no trust, you know. So I acted as hell. He's restoring me to sanity, you know, and made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. It was just a decision. It wasn't that I did it. It was that I was in the process of, you know. And I don't understand, even to this day, I don't understand that kind of mercy, because the longer I've been sober, the more I see, I can tell you a lot of things that happened to me, but I could tell you so much more what could have happened, what didn't happen. By the grace of God, I'm sitting here, and I know that, because by all means, I should be dead. Not necessarily from an overdose or from alcohol, even, but just from the craziness, you know, and how I live. So anyway, and to do that inventory, I thought, I'm going to go to my grave with a lot of these things, because nobody's going to know these things. I mean, they're too freaky for me even to look at. You know, I don't want anybody else to see them. If I don't want to face them, I sure don't want to face them with someone else. And started writing it, and I thought, okay, what I'll do is I'll read it, but I don't have to read this and this and this and this. You know, I can just kind of skip over it, you know? And I started reading it. Blood of Freedom. It was a frightening to me. It was not a fearless in the way of not feeling any fear. It was being willing to go to any length to be as honest as I could at that point. And I think there's levels of honesty. I don't think it all comes at once. Even now, I see there's levels of honesty with me now. More is being revealed even now. My story's changing. I think, did I lie last time? That was, no, I didn't lie. It's just more is being revealed, because I really try to be as honest as I can, you know? So, yeah. Admitting to God, I felt so dirty to begin with and so messed up. And to become willing for God to remove all these defects of character. He hasn't removed all these defects of character, but he's given me a reprieve. And a lot of the defects are gone. But sometimes they're just waiting to crop up, you know, at the most inopportune time. But I have a daily reprieve, you know. And when I do have those character defects pop up, you know, I have step 10. I could do an inventory on it, ask for forgiveness, make amends, and make restitution. See, I didn't know about restitution. I thought, you know, if I said, hey, you know, I was wrong, please forgive me. I'm not going to do this anymore. And if you catch me at it, call me on it. You know? But then I found out, okay, all those things are good. But if I steal money from you, I need to pay you back. You know? If I hurt you, that doesn't mean I have to forever be in your debt. But that means that I can learn how to be kind to you, and I can be kind with others, you know. So, and kind to me. Forgiveness. Because, see, I forgot on the inventory that I needed to be on that list, too. I abused me more than anybody else could abuse me. I can talk about my dad, about foster, about this, about that, about these situations. But I've beaten myself up to no end. No end. Don't need to do that. don't need to do that. And made a list of persons. I need my glasses. I'm having cataract surgery on Thursday. I can't see where the dark. And I know these steps. Okay, we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And before making an amends, too, is to make sure my motive is good. Because sometimes when I've wanted to make an amends, I wanted to stick it to them, too, you know, make them hurt just half as much as me, at least, you know, or more, you know. And sometimes the best amends is the living amends, you know, and to stay sober. And if it's going to hurt someone else, I don't need to say it. What a revelation. What a revelation. It's not all about me. It's not all about me, and it was about me all my life. That ism, I, self, and me. So continue to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. To examine my motives and ask God to search me and see where I do these things, and to ask for forgiveness of my God, of you, but then also being able to forgive myself. But again, then also making restitution. You know, I don't think, for me, I kind of dodged that, you know. And that doesn't mean I have to be indebted to someone forever, but that means I could go a little extra mile sometimes, maybe for them. Not to make up, because I can't make up for the wrongs I have done, but just to love on them a little bit more, just that day, you know, just that moment. And sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. That's one of my low points. If I had a relationship with a human being, the way I treat my God, I don't think I'd want to be their friend for long, unfortunately. I try to pray. I get so busy and wrapped up in what I'm doing. I want to get everything done all the time. And busyness is my enemy. You know, but it's so important for me to stay in tune with him and meditate, to have good readings from the big book. If you have any spiritual books, I have spiritual books I read, the Bible, and to ponder on those things, to think about them. And just let God do the work in me and through me, because I can't do it myself, just like with me being sober. You're not seeing someone who got sober herself. It's a we program. Excuse me. I don't know if anybody heard that. It's a we program. It's not a me program. And you're seeing a product in some of the work which you've done. Whether you have one day, whether you have 40 years, God can use us exactly where we're at, and he's used a lot of you just within a short period of time, which I'm very grateful. And I don't sponsor a lot of people. I don't do a lot of things, and sometimes I just feel useless. But God uses us in different ways with different people at different times. And I hope I'm not using that as a cop-out, you know. Because I still have a thing with interacting with people at times. The difference is I don't have to kick myself in the butt. I don't have to make myself better. I don't have to try to prove myself. I can live and let it rest. And know that God has a purpose. Okay, talking about dangerous places. Okay, this is like I said, been in a lot of dangerous places, needless to say, since I've talked about it. I have some neighbors, and I was invited to a birthday party, and I've gone to several of their birthday parties. I know they drink. I know they use. You know, it's not a big deal. I just stay there for a little while, wish them happy birthday, have something to eat, and leave, you know. Yesterday I went, and this is not a safe place for me, but I, you know, went anyway. And here's this little boy sitting on the chair, and he's ready to grab one of the cookies, and Daddy was going to give him the cookie, and someone said, oh, no, 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 those are adult cookies. You know, I thought, okay. Okay. Yeah. So I felt a little uncomfortable with it because I'm eating their food and I'm eating their stuff there too, you know, and I thought, okay, you know. And you could lace anything with anything, you know, and I thought, okay. And then one of the guys there said, Marianne, why don't you have one of these cookies? And I, oh, Marianne, you're in a dangerous place. You're in a dangerous place. See, when I was on the streets, I didn't think, I'm in a dangerous place. I better get out of these streets, you know. Marianne, you're doing the wrong thing. You better leave. You know, you're drinking too much. You better stop. Yesterday it was different. I'm in a dangerous place. It's time to leave. I said, goodbye. Happy birthday. Took off. And I thought, not going back there. Not going back there. I don't need to go back there. The world does not need for me to save them or for me to be goody two-shoes and try to help everybody. They don't know how to help. You know, the kind of help they want, they can't get from me. They can't score anything for me or do anything. So, you know. So, you know, just, you know, shake the dust and walk away, you know. And best thing I can do is pray for them. But I cannot go to dangerous places to this day. You know, like if I start going to a bar every time I come to a meeting, think, well, I'll just go shoot a little pool. Even after all these years, I'm convinced if I start going to the bar every time I come to a meeting and think, I'll just shoot a little pool, talk to a few people, make a few new friends, it's not going to work. After a while, before you know it, I'll be saying, give me a double-double. The only difference is there's not going to be any guys buying me any drinks at this age. Then I'm going to have to pay for it all. You know? And that's not right. So, you know, I don't like that part, you know. But even if I didn't have to buy my drinks that much, I don't think it would be a good deal, yeah. So. And today I can see how my past, the good, the bad, and the ugly, how God just turned it around and just working it out and weaving it into a beautiful picture. I never dreamt of a life like this. Never dreamt of a life like this. Today I have peace most of the time. Not all the time, most of the time. Whatever I say, it's most of the time. Because I'm not just continuously floating on a cloud or every day's grand. It isn't. But most of the days are. That void in my life is filled. Even on the worst day of my life, when I'm crying, because I cry easy now, that's why I brought tissue, but I'm not crying now, so it's good, you know. I'm glad I got this tissue out when I was sitting down. I was ready to get the tissue out. It seemed like it was never ending. I'm thinking, oh, I'm glad I did it there, you know. And God uses these things in my life. Most of you have never known any of these things because I don't talk about these things, you know, because it's not really necessary. But it seems like God draws people in my life. He wants. And I have a tool chest what God uses, just like you guys have a tool chest Well, when I talk to you or just coming in and that smile or that love, I mean, when I say just, those are huge things. And I don't know why I've been saying just. Because we have so much to offer each other. And today I can be an example of sobriety. Where before I was an example of someone who kept on going back out. I remember the last time I went back out too, I got to go back with that. I was telling someone, I says, well, the last time I went back out, I mean, it was like a month and a half, 2 months. It took me a long time to get back in these rooms. This woman looked at me, she said, a month and a half, 2 months? Guess again, it was a year and a half. But I remember every morning saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink today. It's much easier for me to stay here than come back here. I don't know what it would be like to go back. Now, I know I hear people say that they have too much pride to come back. I don't know if mine would be pride or if it's just, like I say, the last part of my drinking too, is I couldn't get drunk, I couldn't get sober, but I drank to die. I wanted to die. I didn't want to overdose because I'd seen my dad doing all that stuff. But if I drank enough, I might not wake up. That'd be all right. That'd be all right with me. That'd be all right with me. But God saw fit, and I believe it was God. God saw fit to keep me going to this day. Today I have a lot of health problems. And I hate that. I don't like medication. I don't like feeling the way I do. But it's some of those things what draw me to my knees. And that's sometimes where I need to be. Because like I say, I get real busy. I don't want to pray. I don't want to meditate. I want to get the things done. And with illness, sometimes you just can't do it. And there's no other place I can go, you know, because I can talk to you about them. And just like with the past, I think, that's how God is forming me. Because without the past, I wouldn't be the present person I am, who has been molded by God's hands through the 12 steps, with my relationship with Him, and the 12 traditions with my fellows. Today I can let people in, most of the time. And I can let Mary Ann out too. I can cry, I can laugh. I don't have to prove myself to anybody. I don't have to prove myself to my God either. My God loves me just exactly the way I am. But He loves me too much to keep me the way I am. For a long time, I just wanted it Him and I too. Because if we could just, Him and I just work it out. You know, I don't have to be vulnerable to anybody. Then I found out God uses people. He uses all of us. And And I was asked to speak a while back, and I couldn't because I was sick, I think, and different reasons, maybe excuses. And it just so happened that it happened on Easter. And Easter is a very special holiday for me. And in my beliefs, it talks about the newness of life. And this is the hope we have in these rooms, is the newness of life. Went way beyond my expectations. I never expected anything like that. I don't know what's true and what isn't about what my dad said, so, you know, I don't say much what he told me because, you know, some of it sounds really fun and interesting, so I could really get you guys going, you know. But he would say that I drew everything in black, whether it was trees, houses, people. Today, I have a present what is so colorful and a future so divine, no matter how it turns out, it's not a bleak one. I guess I could stop right there. Thank you.